Mrs. Ainsby was Commodore Steve Dearden on the 3rd of April 2008. First of all, I'd like to thank you for agreeing to take part in this project. First question is rather general, really. Basically, has Britain benefited from its nuclear relationship with the United States during your time?
During my time?
Yep.
In this post, or generally?
Throughout your time, your service, your career.
Particularly pertaining to the 1958 agreement, yeah?
Yeah. Or more generally, out of that?
Well, I think, I mean, the answer undoubtedly for on the propulsion side is yes. We are able to share ideas and information with US allies that we are not able to share with anybody else at all. So in terms of giving us a different view of the business that we are in and understanding the things that the US are working on, it's vital to us because otherwise we'd be totally introspective and it's very easy, you know, if you're just a solo person or party to get stuck into your own line of thinking. So from that perspective it gives us an absolutely vital strategic opportunity to talk with a like-minded power on some quite sensitive material.
Conversely, what do you think the United States gets from it?
Actually, they get pretty much the same out of it. Actually, and I'm a career nuclear engineer. I've been in the UK nuclear program since 1984, when I finished first degree and specialist training. And I've worked in this organisation since my third incarnation here, back as director. Before this job, I was 3 years in the US working with the US nuclear program. And before that, I did 3 years here as the safety director. So I can tell you that the US view of what they get out of it is pretty much the same as us. They don't talk to anybody else on the specifics of the nuclear technology that they employ other than us. They, like we, attend open fora on technical stuff, but we rarely present anything that is not openly unclassified. We generally attend rather than present. So that's what they get.
So any negatives, particularly with the MDA?
No, the MDA is the single enabler for nuclear propulsion technology exchange, and although it's not the case in UK law, it's enshrined in US law, and without the 58 MDA they would not be able to talk to us. So that is a single conduit. We interpret it by to mutual agreement as to, you know, how we exchange controls that we place on each other's information, the processes that we go through to exchange information and technology. I don't think there are many negatives, to be honest.
In the MDA, it means Britain isn't allowed to share information with other powers, unless the United States agrees to it.
It means that we don't share information that is in any way, shape or form derived from US nuclear technology and vice versa. So if we have open research that we have done that does not give any insight into the US program, then that would be our decision on whether we choose to share that with anybody else or not. But I'm talking share in terms of a global academic background rather than on a particular other states.
Any particular highlights of your career on the US, UK nuclear?
Well, I'd say I've just spent 3 years in the US, which was particularly fascinating to get an opportunity to see how another program has, how they run their business, how they have invested, what technologies they have developed. We pretty much started from a relatively common perspective in that the first UK propulsion plant was effectively built to print to a US design, a Westinghouse design in the early 60s. Part of the agreement, if you like, in terms of the supply of that technology was that the UK would stand on its own two feet in terms of its ability to own, to discharge responsible nuclear ownership. So we've developed our own processes, systems, understandings, we develop our own technology. We had to develop the capability ourselves without leaning on the US. So we had an initial exchange, the US then effectively stood to one side, we developed a capability, they moved on, and then we sort of came back together after a period of time, and we have a fairly robust technical exchange currently.
So this idea that you always hear it branded about in newspapers that Britain's just dependent on the United States, and the impression you're giving over is in fact that Britain does a lot of work single-handedly and then takes it to the Americans and says,
Well, I'm talking to you in the context of nuclear propulsion, so I'm on reactor systems, not weapons, and that's certainly the case. The US, I would suggest 90% of what we do is derived in the UK. Mm. We share ideas and understanding with the US, but we do 90%+ of our own work. We don't buy wholesale from the US. They probably would not wish to do that sort of business. Our business is built on the ability to share ideas and to look at each other's work and say, yes, we do or don't agree with that, but the decisions ultimately on what we do are entirely ours. We don't use any US contractors for work.
Do the political relationships at the top of you were obviously with Ronald and Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, that was a particularly warm relationship. And then there's Major and Clinton, which isn't. So does this ever filter down to the lower level, the working levels?
I've not seen that, but my real engagement with the US program has been in the last sort of 10 years, where the relationship has been good. I think it would be naive to think that the international situation and particularly the relationship at the top of the shop would not potentially influence, because although the 58 MDA is the key enabler, and how you choose to interpret that is to mutual agreement, and it can wax or wane, I would suspect, depending on how warm the relationships are. Currently we have a very robust exchange with the US.
More generally, not just propulsion, as Britain benefited, does Britain benefit from it being in the nuclear game? Is there any sort of political benefits to that?
I can't really answer you that from a ministry perspective. I can only tell you, where we are on the propulsion. It's not my job to comment. I have my own views.
Should the collaboration with the United States continue, is there any other options available? Maybe the French, maybe, say? Or is that just a no-brainer?
Well, I think certainly if you want to collaborate with the US under the 58 agreement, then by mutual agreement, we both agree not to share information derived from each other's programs. So by definition, working with the French on nuclear propulsion technology specifically is not an option.
Yeah.
We do work with the US on other aspects of submarine design, the French on other aspects of submarine design, but we don't share anything on propulsion. And I think there may or may not be potential benefits if we sought to do that. Really, they would be almost driven by what would you see as the potential benefit. And I think it's generally accepted that, the US are there or thereabouts in terms of world leaders on nuclear propulsion technology, and arguably, I'm sure they would argue they are the best. So I suppose, the question would be, why? Why would we want to go? Why would we want to jeopardise that relationship? And what would be in it for the UK? But the ability to work with the US brings considerable cost leverage to us. We get
the economics.
In terms of in terms of bang for your buck, we get a lot from working for the US, with the US.
Which you would with anything.
Which we may not get from others.
Britain's actual deterrent, is it now at its lowest point to be credible, would you say?
Well, I mean, again, this isn't one for me, but the staff answer to that is that our deterrent posture has always been, it's not a gold-plated system. It's minimum credible deterrent. So there's a level which is judged politically and militarily at which deterrent is not credible. We maintain a level above that. But we never have. We have the same number of submarines now as we've ever had. On missile
four.
Submarines,
isn't it?
Four.
This is probably out of your area, but arms control. Do you see any prospects for further arms control between the two principal nuclear owners, Russia, the United States, and does Britain have a role to play in this? Can it have a role to play in it? Or should Britain just keep out of it?
I don't know. I can comment on that, to be quite honest. You'd need to ask somebody who's got insight into that.
That's fair enough. This is probably the same Trident itself.
Mm-hmm.
Should we upgrade Trident? It's just been in the media recently.
Well, I mean, I think Trident is an interesting one. You could claim that Trident has been a hugely successful program, really. It has delivered what it said it would. Assured deterrence and stability and peace in our time. Last 20 years, and if you take the Polaris successors before that, then the last 50 years, it was a hugely successful acquisition program. It delivered on time and on cost, working with the US. Like every system, has a finite life, and the view of those understand nuclear weapons and what the deterrent capability required is, they judge that we need to continue, and now is the right time to start thinking about a replacement. So, against that background, I would say, yeah, we need to replace Trident. It's the right thing to do.
Has Britain got a key with SLBMs? Could we not, go cruise missiles, or do the arguments for SLBM still stand?
Well, again, you'd need to ask people in London who did who've done the studies. But I can tell you that in the run-up to the white paper, there was over 2 years of work done solely looking at what are the options, and it was a full range of options, not just let's replace the submarine launch ballistic missile. And the view or the conclusions of that study, and that was based on both qualitative and quantitative argument, was that it was the most cost-effective means of delivering a deterrent capability that basically couldn't be taken out.
Can it not be found?
Well, I mean, there's no such thing as you can't be found, but in terms of how does that compare against a fixed silo-based system, for example, then the answer is it's orders of magnitude more difficult to identify a submarine. Submarines are big things, but the oceans are very big, and it's a bit like looking for a needle in a haystack.
So the Russians are after the lucky. Very lucky.
You need to know where to start looking.
So this defence white paper, which
yes.
concluded Trident's got to go forward, it was a from scratch initiative.
Yes.
It was, what one should we have?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It looked at what are the options for delivering, I believe, not whether we should or should not have one. That's not a military
decision. No, it's a military
decision. That's a political decision. But in terms of how could you deliver a capability and what would be the cost issues associated with those, and it was a clean sheet approach.
Do you have any words of advice for future technicians, scientists, people like yourself who are involved with these types of things?
Yeah, I mean, I not and advice is always a bit pompous, isn't it, to give advice to be frank. But I have a couple of observations. I say I've been in the program for 24 years. There's no substitute for engineering competence and quality knowledge. You know, you can't transfer your responsibility if you're a nuclear power.
Mm.
If you're in a nuclear game, you've got to understand what you're dealing with. So you've got to have the best people, you've got to have enough of the best people, and that's got to be in both the government and in industry, you know, in order to manage a program safely and to appropriately spend the significant sums of public money that come with that program.
So the government should be investing more engineering, university level things
like that. I personally think that as an engineer, I'm a chartered engineer, I'm a fellow of the Institute of Mechanical Engineers, that we undervalue engineers in this country, and we are reaping the benefits of a lack of engineering investment in the last 20 years.
Mm.
And I think we have a fragile industrial base capability for complex engineering projects in this country. Mechanical engineering, I'm not talking about software engineering, I'm talking about, you know, bits and pieces.
My dad would agree with you, because he's an electronic engineer, but he's always banging on at me as a historian. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, do something proper. Like,
I think the UK does undervalue engineers. I mean, again, I am biased, but you know, engineers, if you go to Germany, if you go to the US and your chartered engineer status, that's you know, that's a significant alignment. That's on a level with chartered accountants, you know, doctors,
yeah.
People of that sort of level of society, and I don't personally judge that to be the case in this country.
Is this undermining, or could it potentially undermine Britain's relationship with the United States if there's not enough engineers to actually put?
Well, I think fundamental to having an exchange that's mutually beneficial is credibility.
Yeah.
And so if you lose your status in the eyes of your partner in terms of your engineering credibility, then to my mind that would be a risk. Yes.
That sounds a bit. Would it be fair to conclude that the NDA, the Anglo-American nuclear relationships, have a heart is interests. It's what each side can benefit from, it, rather than the idea of cultural things, that type of arguments. Would it be fair?
Yeah, the NDA, the NDA is an enabler.
Yeah.
It's facilitated by political considerations. You know, what the shared ideals of the two countries are. That enables the MDA to be. What you do under that is about engineering and technology exchange.
Right.
So we do what we need to do to support our own programs in a manner that is mutually beneficial, particularly where we can avoid duplication and spending for the sake of it.
So economically, the MDA is a big asset for the British.
Strategically, the MDA is a big asset for the UK, because without it, we would not be able to exchange with the US, and we get
the congressional
problem. We both get you know, technology, academic, and financial benefit in terms of cost avoidance, rather than buying in each other's backyards.
Does any sort of information go across which maybe shouldn't?
We don't have any wink, nudge, nudge. We exchange everything on a formal basis under the MDA, in accordance with agreed processes, and the checks to make sure that each side safeguards its own and the other's information are very significant.
Yeah.
You know, what we deal with is very sensitive, and there's no margin for error.
Pretty much concludes, I think, I was asked to ask you.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.